The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Are you making the most of your KiwiSaver investment? Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of strong long-term performance. Making a smart decision now could add tens of thousands of dollars by the time you reach retirement. Book a no-obligation chat with a Generate KiwiSaver advisor today at generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns.
Nau mai, hoki mai ki a The Fold, e mihi nei, ko Duncan Grieve tōku ingoa. This is an episode that is brought to you in partnership with my beloved sponsors at O Media. Genuinely just so grateful to that business for the support of the Fold. It would not exist without them. And O stands for out of home. They create the advertising sort of infrastructure and delivery that sits in places like bus stops and malls and all around Tāmaki Makaurau. And one of the things that is not particularly well known about O, I don't think, when it's known to its clients, not necessarily to people who aren't thinking more broadly about it, is the extent to which they are becoming a very data-driven firm. And that's really a big sort of way into what this episode is about. I have on the Fold today two people. The first is O's David Owen, who is the Research and Insights Director at O. And, well, he'll explain shortly the sort of more weeds, in the weeds aspect of what his job is. But, you know, he's just a guy who's just has never met a piece of data that he hasn't found fascinated and tried to sort of slot into a bigger story. And that's both data that O gathers, but also data that O processes and kind of feeds into its model of understanding how people move around and how you reach them. Alongside David is Tori Colborn, who is the CMO at Black Pearl Group, which is an NZX-listed SaaS and cloud business. She explains the thesis again, but largely it's about for their customers getting more customers. And she comes to Black Pearl after a long period of time working at Curious, which is a subsidiary of Spark focused on data and AI. So you've got two people who live in the world of really highly targeted and data-driven and responsive technology and the sort of bleeding edge of that world. It's something that notoriously New Zealand isn't particularly sophisticated at, and we're leaving a lot of money on the table and opportunity on the table as businesses and as people in communications by not doing that. So this whole conversation is operating in that area, but there are a good number of concrete examples that everyone listening will sort of recognize along the way that help kind of make it flesh and keep it from that level of pure abstraction. Really grateful to O for setting this up and to David and Tori for coming along. This is David Owen, Insights Director at O Media, and Tori Colborn, CMO at Black Pearl Group on The Fold. David, Tori, tēnā korua and welcome to The Fold.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, really excited to get into this topic. It feels like something which is super relevant to our audience, but not necessarily something that a lot of people have the kind of detailed knowledge of that the two of you share. So I wondered if, David, you could start by telling me a bit about your role and maybe whether it's a particular set of data or an insight that has really kind of excited you recently in terms of the out-of-home space?
Yeah, so I guess my role is the Research and Insights Director at O. Pretty multifaceted kind of role. So we're basically broadly across the business, everyone from sales teams and what they do from an advertising sense, what products they should be kind of like lumping together, how you kind of sell our network, what's the audience data we can overlay, you know, anything to do with understanding consumers, what makes them tick, what's the kind of intersection between how they're operating and where, you know, out of home can effectively reach them. And then, you know, lots of stuff internally as well. So, you know, everything from business, you know, understanding and insights and audiences to, you know, understanding the advertising industry. And, you know, it's a pretty endless kind of role. I'm a bit of a nosy bugger, so get stuck in, love to have an opinion, love to do, you know, basically anything in terms of strategy. So it's, yeah, bit of a whack-a-mole scenario in terms of what I'm kind of doing on a day-to-day, but basically just, yeah, nosy, get stuck in. In terms of data, I love it all equally. All data is created equal in my eyes. It's kind of what you do with it off the back end. So really kind of what I look for is, you know, what's the insight, what's the story I'm trying to tell, and what's the, I guess, data that you can kind of feed into that and kind of mold and create something, you know, tangible for a business or an advertiser or a marketer to kind of, you know, pick up and run with. So in terms of what we're currently doing, we've my two favorite bits of data at the moment outside of MBA analytics in my personal life is kind of really we partnered with a tech company called Movin, who do a lot of it's kind of traffic management. So their thing is trying to manage disruption for people like Tonkin and Taylor and, you know, all those kind of construction companies when they're doing roadworks. And I saw kind of an opportunity for us as a business to kind of go, well, you know, you're looking at mobility of traffic, and that kind of has a really big relevance to what we do in out-of-home. So how do we use those mobility insights to tell really interesting stories about consumer mobility? So, you know, look at long weekends and what's happening in terms of people leaving the city earlier. What are those times in which, you know, people get in their car and try to beat traffic and they ultimately get stuck in traffic? So for us, it's a really good opportunity to go, hey, if you're advertising and you want to, you know, tell a story, if you're an advertiser and reach people on their way out of the, you know, the big smoke, what's those times when you start kind of executing your creative? What are those stories you can kind of tell? And then the other one that we're working on is a big audience targeting product. So leveraging mobile location data, you know, lots of really interesting insights in terms of where people go, what are the brands they're kind of leveraging. And it's quite a cool product just in terms of it takes all that kind of mobility data and, you know, actually makes sense of it in terms of target audiences. And then we overlay a really interesting kind of mathematical model to actually pick which sites are going to optimize best to that audience. So, you know, out of home's proliferated. There's like 11,000 plus sites. So if you're an advertiser and you've got, you know, a couple of $1,000 and you can buy 40 sites out of those 11,000, how do you actually pick the best 40? So that's kind of, you know, it's turning lots of data, lots of kind of interesting information and making it tangible for advertisers to basically just pick up and go, cool, these are the best 40 sites for me in this moment. So yeah, lots of interesting stuff.
Yeah, and it does speak to the sort of complexity and sophistication that has flooded into marketing over the past sort of 10 or 15 years, which is quite a good way of bringing you in here, Tori. You know, you're relatively new at Black Pearl, but have been in the space of data and its application prior to that with Spark and its subsidiary Curious. I was just wondering if you could tell me about your background and maybe a sense of where the intersection of these two businesses or certainly the opportunity that exists between them is right now.
Yeah, sure. So, correct. I've been the CMO of Black Pearl for the last 4 months. Prior to that, I was head of growth of Curious, which is the data and AI arm of Spark. For the last 12 years, I've probably been at that beautiful intersection, quite deeply educating myself around information systems and marketing. And as an output of that, there's a lot of data and analytics that come from that. As head of growth at Curious, I did manage a really quite broad team across marketing, sales, and solution consulting. And now with my role as CMO at Black Pearl Group, it's purely marketing. The biggest difference between the two is going from the New Zealand market to the US market, and the US market kind of complexity of what people are expecting over in the US. So my interest in out-of-home has really emerged in the last couple of years because there's this huge opportunity where all your offline media is now turning to digital billboards, as well as hyper-personalization across content, like David was speaking about before. There's this opportunity now where you can actually take, you know, behavioral analytics, you can take geolocation, you can take the temperature of the day, you can take the time of day, the month and the year, and you can decide when's best to buy. So that intersection between going from online to offline and then offline to online, it's a really big opportunity that never used to be there. That's been in New Zealand, probably only really spoken about in the last couple of years, but obviously now working predominantly with the market in the US, there's been, obviously huge amounts of advancement over there.
So in terms of that transition, thinking about the Black Pearl side, when you go from a Spark, you know, with it's very defined and very, an audience that you kind of would have a pretty good handle on, to a Black Pearl, which has a really specific audience that's distributed in the most prosperous country on earth. What has the last few months been like for you, and what are some of the key things that have leapt out in terms of the changing way that you understand and apply data, AI, analytics, and so on in that context?
It's been really interesting because it's kind of twofold in a way that how it's impacted me and my role providing, value to the company by creating integrated marketing campaigns for the US market. But then the second element is that's what we actually help our customers do. So Black Pearl Group's mantra is we help our customers find more customers, and that's through the use of data and AI. So for the first part, it's been really, really interesting to see how the US market responds to emerging technology. So your everyday SME over in the US is adopting emerging technology, and they're taking advantage of these new up-and-coming niche SaaS companies because they're delivering products that are at a lower price point, and they're able to then help those customers with what they're trying to get from that outcome. Whereas in New Zealand, predominantly, they're only comfortable with working with your big tech companies, the likes of Microsoft, Google, whereas in the US, there's a huge amount of market. It's really, really diverse. The way that impacts your marketing campaigns has been really different as well, because you've got to be constantly changing. Something in New Zealand that you could have been doing for the last 3 years would have completely evolved in the US. So your marketing strategies are evolving as technology evolves. Every company in the US is willing to try be a first mover. So they're trying to take advantage of whatever that new technology is or whatever they can do to create a better hyper personalization and take advantage of all those consumer analytics and behavioral analytics. And then how can that actually gear up their campaign to create more ROI for their business? Whereas in New Zealand, we do very much have a little bit of a closed mind to that. So again, over in the US, it's quite prominent for you to put together campaigns and test and refine. And, as a marketer, when you work for a leader that takes on that mentality as well, is you get to introduce different things as part of your marketing stack, test, refine, spend, learn really quickly. Whereas in New Zealand, stakeholders within the marketing realm, you've got to work with partners like oMedia to really decide what the outcome of that marketing campaign is going to be, how that translates to business outcomes, what the ROI of that outcome is going to be. And it presents a really big challenge to companies like oMedia in the offline space, because if you don't have a leader that believes in it, you need to take advantage of data analytics to show that it's actually making an impact.
I mean, that's a good time to bring you back in, David. Because this stuff can often seem a little bit abstracted unless you are really in the weeds of it. I was just wondering if there was a client or a campaign that you have had proximity to recently that illustrates someone who's really taking advantage of this, because it's always a spectrum. There'll be some people who are just spraying and you know, brute force trauma marketing kind of thing. But there will also be people who are really leaning into what the data that your company is starting to surface, right?
Yeah, there's a, I guess, a couple of campaigns that have stuck out to me. I definitely kind of take a step back and look at things quite holistically and broadly. I fully agree that there's a lot of data company, well, a lot of New Zealand marketers that kind of either don't leverage data or frankly just can't afford it. I think that's a really big problem, just that kind of tyranny of distance New Zealand has. I kind of see it definitely in the research space where we have big Aussie clients and they turn up and they go, we did this research in Australia, we want to do it in New Zealand. And you go, cool, well, you know, research costs the same across both countries, same as kind of data, but your campaign here is, you know, 10 cents compared to the dollar over in AU. So, you know, do you want to spend all your money on research or all your money on actually doing effective marketing? So, you know, the one that has stuck out to me recently that most people probably know is Tina from Turners, not specifically a no campaign, but one that, you know, when you look at it, take a step back and see what they've done, I think is a really kind of powerful way in which a marketing department has kind of, you know, orientated themselves to leverage their own first-party data first and foremost. So understand that, you know, what do they actually need to drive in terms of business outcomes? They understood that they need to get basically more people selling their cars to them so they had better stock. They understood the kind of consumer process or path to purchase that, you know, if people sold their car to them, they're more likely to buy a car from them. And then, you know, kind of added on what I think is a really unique kind of New Zealand campaign in terms of the creative territory. So obviously Tina from Turners, huge amount of kind of, you know, brand cues, brand codes within the actual creative itself. And then they've stuck with it, which I think is the biggest thing. So just taking that, much like the Pack and Save Stickman, just kind of rinsing and repeating that Tina from Turners. And when you actually think about it over the life of that kind of marketing strategy and what they're trying to achieve, it's, you know, hugely powerful in the New Zealand landscape. So to me, a lot of it sits with the actual creative execution. The data can only get you so far. I think, you know, making sure that we don't just look at things in silos. So how do we kind of, you know, take all that really interesting consumer insight information about your own product, your brand, your place in the market, and then actually do something really creative off the back end, because marketing isn't, an exact science. There is that little bit of magic sprinkled in as well. And, you know, I think they've done, you know, a fantastic job in that kind of space. And, you know, you look at the TRA culture, New Zealand kind of Kiwi codes, and it's, you know, tapping into that kind of dry humour and the wit that we tend to have and kind of taking the piss out of yourself a little bit. So, you know, to me, that's a, you know, really good kind of big overarching campaign and market. On our side of the fence, I just love good creative. And there's been a couple really interesting examples of that. We had the NZDF did a quite interesting campaign. So they started with creative territory. So they had interesting stories from, you know, people of the different NZDF forces. And they made the QR code and the images of the people in the stories the kind of hero of the creative. And there was nothing more to it. But what I was really trying to drive consumers to do is actually scan and go online and watch those videos in depth, because, you know, rather than trying to blunt force a creative in between a TV ad or a YouTube pre-roll ad, it was kind of getting people to come to them so they could, you know, watch and discover the content, and then overlaid interesting data off the back of it. So how do we put that creative, which is a QR code, in areas where we get more pedestrians, for example, because it's a bit tough to scan the QR code as you're whipping down the road at 60 k's an hour. So, you know, putting it in places like, you know, retail, where people have, you know, a chance to absorb the information, absorb the creative and go, actually, there's something I want to scan. And, you know, all the, they set it up really well. So the QR code linked back to whatever medium it kind of originated from. So being able to go, cool, these are the channels that are working best for us based on budget and spend and stuff. So when they've gone to do it again, they know how to start kind of really curating their buy to the best medium. So, yeah, a couple of different examples, but, you know, anything that's got good creative generally kind of, you know, jumps out at me.
So, Tori, you recently helped author a paper on AI, to return to the topic du jour, to establish a benchmark for New Zealand's AI maturity with MB, the AI Forum, and Spark. Again, that we've seen so many incredible demos, particularly in the generative space, but the use cases are often a bit abstracted, or you know they're not as strong as the demos, at least in the public mind. Is there an example that came through in that context that sort of, you know, did make it into the more concrete realm for you?
The research report was establishing the benchmark of New Zealand. So that was 2 years ago when we did that report, and it was a perfect time to do it because it took a snapshot of New Zealand's AI maturity. And most of the outcomes of that report were around that only 1 in 5 organisations in New Zealand had actually moved out of trial and had put something into their operations where they were actually getting good business outcomes from. It also showed a snapshot of us against different, countries across the world to show that we were, if we didn't act, that we'd be left behind. And then that has dramatically changed in the last 2 years, in particular the last 1 year. And in part, some of that is actually due to things like ChatGPT. So a really simple user face where every man and his dog can go in and query it and get something out that they can get value from. So small use cases like that have actually been brought back into the organisation give hope that the everyday person can use it. Arguably, marketing teams have actually probably been the first to move. It's definitely been something that, as marketers, we've been looking at automation for the last couple of years. Most organisations use inbound marketing and CRM systems, the likes of HubSpot, where you've been doing hyper-personalised communication through those tools. And now with the additive of being able to have generative or generated content through generative AI, your marketing teams are probably the first in the departments of any enterprise that have been moving a lot quicker.
That's really interesting, right? And kind of it scans with the sense of people start by playing and then move on down the line. David, a bit of a different direction, but there's data and then there's the insights. Is there an insight that you've come across or drawn from your work lately that has really sort of leapt out at you?
So the thing that's kind of captured me recently is there's been a Mark Ritson article and a handful of other bits and pieces around the wear out of creative, which I think is just an interesting kind of point to make in marketing. And it's something that, you know, my entry into out of home, I've always thought, you know, people pull down creative too early, the campaigns are a bit too short, and they don't give it time to kind of marinate in the wider world. And
it's interesting, right, because so how much of that is creative agencies wanting throughput versus, you know, an audience actually developing a relationship with the creative? You know, you have to look at the sort of incentives the various organisations involved.
100%. And I think your point exactly, it is the marketing teams picking it up first and foremost, because, you know, there's a really good opportunity to, you know, take your creative and start manipulating it based on, you know, live data, and especially with the kind of rise of digital out of home. What's the, you know, having AI tell you what people are buying at McDonald's at this hour, what's the kind of product you really want to push, what do we need to get out the door, and how does that then turn up in your actual marketing creative? And I think, you know, for me, the data comes from, you know, System One, it comes from Kantar, it comes from analytics partners who are, you know, really big, powerful companies in terms of the amount of marketing information they hold on hand. And we've worked with analytics partners on some ROI studies in the past, both in AU and NZ. And the thing that has always stood out to me is it's a really big, powerful data set. You need proper people that understand how to kind of extract all those insights, so people not like me. But, you know, how do you kind of create the insights that is actually meaningful in marketing? So for us, you know, the New Zealand study really pointed towards a 59-41% split in terms of, you know, where your ROI comes from. So 59% of your ROI off your campaigns comes from the really kind of functional stuff. So your placement, your audiences you're reaching, how long you're in market, the amount to spend, the combinations of different, you know, media, different out-of-home panels, what you're basically what, you know, is happening functionally in the market. And that other 41% is the creative element. So, you know, we always say to all of our kind of advertisers, you know, yep, you can do all the functional stuff really well, use lots of interesting data, you know, have the perfect plan. And then if you put in crappy creative, you leave 41% of your effectiveness on the table. So, you know, I really like what those companies do because they just make marketers smarter, give you the kind of levers to make better, more informed decision making.
One thing that you just said there, David Tori, I'd love it if you could pick up on. There is some, you know, you use this example of a marketer which has got, or of a company, let's look at it holistically, that has got a certain amount of inventory. Maybe that inventory is in an FMCG space where it's kind of got a ticking clock over its head, and that there is some imagined world where, you know, you can use price and marketing as a trigger to kind of control for that excessive inventory. To do that, you'd have to have this all of that quite well wired up. In your experience, Tori, have you come across companies within New Zealand or case studies internationally where people are starting to connect the departments, which can often be quite a long way apart, to the point where that is done in a live and even an automated way?
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely over that lockdown period, when teams were kind of forced behind their laptops and forced to manage things like inventory and all your operational stuff together and to move that digitally, that's when there was that huge leap. And now it comes down to the opportunity of hyper-personalization. So in New Zealand in particular, your e-commerce sites are the ones that have moved quickly in that area. So they are recommending products and upsell opportunities for their digital engagement, following their digital engagement, I should say. Spark is also doing a lot within that domain. So they're obviously really lucky in the way that they get a lot of information and a lot of data across every household. So then they can blend that B2C kind of website behavior to then tell them when they should be upselling and cross-selling. Similar with them blending with their offline as well. Something that most people and most listeners will understand is when you get on the motorway and it tells you where you're going and how long it's going to get there, it's Auckland Transport obviously using mobile location data. So similar with that is it's another use case of how they're using it to create hyper-personalized experiences for what that person is doing within their everyday life.
That's fascinating.
Hello for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
David, about a year ago when we first entered into this partnership with oMedia, I had the demographer Paul Spoonley on the fold, and one of the things that he unpacked that I know, you know, we did a live event not long after that really, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise, but I still think that people can kind of ignore the role of demography a bit and talked about our increasingly complex demography, which in this era also lends itself to different behaviours and needing to be marketed to in different ways. I've heard that was very impactful to some of those clients. Can you talk about that and particularly how they've responded to the sort of weather or challenge that they represented?
Yeah, that was, in hindsight, an epic project to work on. You know, I even had an email today, people downloading the white paper. So we're, you know, 12 months down the track and people are still, you know, searching for it, downloading it. And yeah, the response from marketers was huge. So I definitely did far more presentations than what I planned for, was presenting late into last year, the whole kind of research deck. And with Paul, he has so many insights. The podcast you guys did was fascinating, and just his ability to kind of churn out information that's actually really relevant. I definitely think as an individual and a consumer, you often get stuck in your day-to-day. So what am I doing next? What's happening on the weekend? Where do I need to be? And what that project kind of gave us is a really good opportunity to stand back and kind of go, well, what are those really big fundamental macro trends happening out of market? So, you know, everything he talked to in terms of the changing demography, the kind of, emerging kind of fragmentation with all the different generations in terms of where the wealth is currently sitting, the different kind of priorities of everyone, and ultimately what that kind of ends up in terms of policy. The big thing for us as a business, the demography stuff is really relevant, interesting for marketers, really interesting for all of our agency partners, and pretty sure every agency had Professor Paul Spoonley in there to do a presentation to their clients. So it's cool that, you know, people picked it up and ran with it. The thing for us as a business, I think all the, you know, what's happening with demography and how does that play into kind of public infrastructure and, you know, really what is the role of out-of-home moving forward? You know, our thing is to make public spaces better. And, you know, we do that through, you know, maintaining, owning and kind of getting all the bus stops up to scratch so that people, you know, have the, you know, can catch public transport and really it's, you know, maintained, it's not broken, it's not shattered glass everywhere, there's a seat and protection from the weather, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's really the goal that, you know, we wanted to get out of it is just understanding, you know, what's happening with the infrastructure, what are the kind of big trends and are we, you know, best placed to kind of serve it in the long run? You know, and you know, you can only look at the work that the spin-off has been doing with that independent housing commission report out of Wellington. And it's kind of like everything we talked about in terms of making cities denser, you know, having really viable transport links, you know, making cities more accessible. And it's like now there's reports and it's a year down the track and people are still quite archaic in terms of how they're planning. So it's, you know, a really big, interesting piece. You know, the insight I saw the other day was that the New Zealand birth rate in relation to deaths, so the kind of natural population increase, was the lowest it's been since 1948. And that's, you know, everything Paul was saying. He's like, this is where we are. It's pretty dire at the moment. It's only going to get worse. And I think when the census comes out later this year, it's probably going to pinpoint that exactly, that we, from a demography standpoint, are changing quite rapidly. And are there the policies in place to actually, you know, lift that birth rate, you know, give parents the opportunity to actually kind of, you know, fundamentally raise children? And then from an infrastructure standpoint, is there enough housing? Are people, you know, enjoying and living in cities the way they should be moving forward? So big piece, very interesting. I was surprised at the, you know, the response to it. You know, at the time you had a huge amount of data, quantitative, qualitative data, and there were so many different pathways we could have picked with it. And luckily the one we picked kind of resonated. We were a bit fearful at the beginning, but if I could do it over again, I'd do it with a bit of bigger bang. So
no, it's so interesting. And it's interesting you particularly raised that, you know, that you're talking about the coverage of the, we've called it the war for Wellington, because it does, Joel, who's running that, talks about the old town and the new city and that tension between the sort of the people who want things to stay as they are and the desperate need of people for them to evolve. Is that something that you know, you know in terms of Tory, your the whether it's at Curious or Black Pearl, we've talked a lot about how you can do hyper personalization. But that sort of, you know, not just assuming an idealized type of person or sort of whether it's a day part or whatever else, but also down to kind of extra layers of demography around the all the different aspects of what goes into make an individual. Does that sort of feed into these kind of systems?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest term that people are now talking to is your ICP, so understanding your ideal customer profile, and then how you take all those data points across your ICP and then find that data, then put back into your model. So at Black Pearl Group, what we do is we help people define their ICP. We create products and services that support them for finding more of those ICPs. And then if you've got an organisation that can't collect that, you can obviously work out with different data providers to collect more audience builder type profiles. And then in a way, it's really interesting once companies start to put investment into that area, because you've been so heavily reliant on your Facebook, like your Meta, sorry, and Google, whereas if you can define your ideal customer profile and create a subset of them through your own media channels, the likes of your website, you can then start uploading that into your different Meta platforms to basically bring your cost of acquisition down. So the more that you understand all those different attributes that create your ideal customer profile, the better you can target them through out of home, the better that you can target them online by bringing down their cost of acquisition and putting the power back into the business.
It's a really interesting point you make there about the sort of the extent to which Alphabet and Meta's product sort of dominate the psyche of marketers who are trying to do that more kind of personalized granular piece. But as you say, there are so many kind of niches and SaaS businesses that have been built around that that can kind of take process and kind of make that whole world a lot more efficient and tactile for organizations. And in so doing, fight the fact that the sort of quote unquote rent seeking elements of, you know, where it can feel not even necessarily deliberately, but there's a sort of a natural power law with the scale of the Meta and Alphabet businesses that they just tend to eat an ever greater share of your marketing budget as a result. You know, can you give me a sense within your sort of customer base of some of the, you know, those more niche SaaS products and what they have sort of unlocked for your customers in terms of that big black pearl thesis of customers, you know, getting your customers more customers?
Yeah, for sure. I can probably go back to an example that I've got from working in New Zealand. So I used to work as the team captain of the consumer collecting team at Red Bull. So when they were investing in your out-of-home in a specific area to drive a consumption occasion, what they used to do is have the Red Bull girls go out as well as your off-prem salespeople go out, and then they would, in that area, be able to do consumer collecting, you know, sampling to ensure that people were actually associating that drink with that occasion. So that's an example of an organisation that's got a lot of money to put behind research and analytics to actually then get the return on investment from the out-of-home advertising campaign. And then similar with the off-prem and on-prem, they would then go into that same area and just ensure that everything, product was on shelf and that, you know, bars were really highly supplied to make sure that when they went in that it was there. And then there's this bust of technology, and now every organisation has data at their hands to ensure that they're actually getting the return on investment for that campaign. So there's these niche organisations popping up now to do research, to provide you data, to ensure that you're able to, as a one or two man marketing team, have a tool set that enables you to actually capture that data. You no longer need these huge integrated marketing campaigns. You can just create one or two, you know, you can have a relationship with one or two SaaS providers to ensure that you're getting the information that you need to then ensure that you're getting the return on investment for that campaign.
So, you know, what you were just talking about there and what we've been talking about for the meat of this conversation involves on some level a gap between where New Zealand is and could be in terms of the evolution of its business and in that kind of broad marketing context. Assuming that you know, you both and people like you can kind of change that, could you sort of do a bit of future gazing for a moment and sort of thinking about the sort of bleeding edge and conjecture around trends that you're seeing at the moment? Maybe each of you, in turn, starting with you, David, could give a sense of where this accelerates to and what opportunity it creates?
From an out-of-home sense, I definitely think in the short term it's very much in the kind of creative realms. To me, you know, that kind of, to some degree, personalization, you know, out-of-home is definitely a one-to-many medium, so it's kind of hard to be hyper-personalized to the 50 people that are potentially within view of an ad. But how do you bring in all the different data aspects, so your own consumer data, weather data, traffic data, you know, everything that's quite interesting, and how do you bring that into the creative? And so historically, rather than having a creative kind of company have to go build that creative to get it approved and push it through, how do you kind of do all of that on the fly? And I think with the kind of growth of digital inventory, the, you know, really quick adoption of programmatic trading in the New Zealand market, so the automated buying and selling of digital spots is, you know, really kind of accelerated that. You're seeing, you know, a lot of growth there, a lot of pickup from agencies just because they have that kind of tactical use, bringing in data and then, you know, executing on the fly. And I think, you know, creative is the kind of next cab off the rank in that space. And then, you know, looking at it, taking a step back and the kind of out-of-home sense, we've seen a lot of that kind of fake out-of-home, definitely in the kind of LinkedIn space where, you know, people come up with a fake kind of CGI kind of campaign. So the one out of the UK with the bus that was having its eyelashes brushed or whatever it was. And, you know, I think with that generative AI, you've seen people being able to kind of plug in, you know, a few prompts and it spits out a, you know, a bit of creative for you. So what does that entail? Because I think it gives, you know, everyday plonkers like myself the opportunity to be creative, whereas traditionally I probably would just leave it up to the professional. So I think that's kind of an interesting space that's kind of growing, and will we see a lot more kind of fake out of home for the kind of viral moments that can sit within, you know, TikTok and Meta and all those kind of spaces, which, you know, to some degree is a bit average for us because we don't get any money off the back of it. But
That does validate in a way the thesis that this is where real impact happens in a way.
Yeah, and it kind of builds out of home up in terms of the mindset of, you know, marketers and everyday people, because I think, you know, there's something, you know, unattainable about out of home inventory that, you know, not everyone can kind of buy an ad on an out of home screen. You know, maybe one day it'll be possible and I can have my ugly mug up on a big billboard somewhere. But, you know, at the moment it is kind of a space for brands, and, you know, definitely us as a business, both in AU and NZ, definitely look at it as it's a creative canvas, and, you know, what are you painting on it? What are you doing to your brand? How are you kind of selling yourself to, you know, your everyday consumers? So that's kind of where I see the AI stuff going. From a more the stuff I get to deal with on a day-to-day basis, audience measurement is my absolute baby. I love it and hate it at the same time, because I think, you know, out of home is, you know, lag behind a little bit in that space, and there's a really big opportunity to kind of take advantage of some of these big trends. You know, Tori mentioned, you know, lots of kind of mobile location data. How do we tap into that to do something really interesting in the measurement space? You know, we've got lots of good mobile data at the moment feeding measurement systems, but, you know, how do we visualize it in a really intuitive way for, you know, advertisers and marketers? How do they, you know, how do we use AI to kind of, you know, do all of your planning and analysis on where you should be at any given time? So I think it's quite like an interesting time for out of home in terms of where we could be going and what we should be tapping into in the tech space, because, yeah, you know, it's one of those kind of last mediums that you can't really ad block and avoid until we get to the minority report kind of stage of it. So
hopefully you've got maybe 10 years but before then.
I'll be fishing somewhere, hopefully.
What about you, Tori? What excites you about the way and this is developing, the trajectory it's on?
For offline media, I'm really excited to see where it goes in terms of that personalization, because you've now got digital signs, you've now got real-time data feeding brands like the likes of Corona. Do they only put advertising up when it's 25 degrees and above? You've got ice cream brands, you've got all sorts that can take advantage of that. Similar to what David said before, we've only just started to see early use cases for, you know, organizations taking advantage of geolocation data. So it's going to be really exciting, because marketers like myself that are purely digital and have been working mostly in a digital realm, we can now take advantage of offline media, because, yeah, once you can, I guess, bring that back into the fold of how you'd create that return on investment through the data that gets pumped through to that, it's an easier thing to sell marketers to their stakeholders. And then just from a generic, what's going to be really interesting for us to follow in the future is really it just comes back down to like that hyper-personalization. What most people are consuming at the moment around AI are like on your e-commerce sites, you've got abandoned carts and you've got, you know, these large language models and all this intelligence around like small use cases like that. Also things like your AI chatbots on most websites now, they're all kind of just the first iteration of what that experience could be. And most of it is actually quite a negative feedback around the impact of using AI in your marketing. So to see this develop over the next couple of years around the hyper-personalization piece, it'll be really, really exciting to watch.
Yeah, there's that sort of cliche of AI is anything that doesn't work yet. And sometimes you can encounter it and you feel like, that's going to be amazing, but not. but it's not yet.
Now.
But the speed that it's developing, is so fast that you can feel, well, this time it really is going to be quite shock and awe when it really starts to sort of flow through the bloodstream of the sector. Hey, thank you both so much for coming up. It's been, you know, it's made my head hurt at times, just the level of granular detail and specificity of knowledge that the pair of you have. But you can see for businesses that are anyone who's marketing at the moment to really kind of take full advantage of the suite of services and technology and data that exists out there right now, this is absolutely where people's minds need to be at. So no, I really appreciate you coming up on the fold to kind of unpack all that for us.
Awesome. Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.